Construction is well underway at the Wells Fargo Center in advance of Philadelphia hosting the Democratic National Convention next month. Those efforts include building a demonstration zone for protesters in FDR Park across the street. That zone will include creature comforts, bathrooms, and misting stations. Harder to discern whether protester speech will be safeguarded as well. That's according to Chris Hermes, activist, legal worker, and author of Crashing the Party, Legacies and Lessons from the RNC 2000. He has an article on the issue at newsworks.org and penned the Huffington Post piece, Will Philadelphia Adhere to Decades-Old Restrictions on Police Infiltration at Upcoming DNC Protests? Chris, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Your book, RNC 2000, of course, refers to the convention in Philadelphia, but those laws were actually penned way back in 1987.
Correct. It was at the anniversary of the U.S. Constitution that was held here in Philadelphia. There were protest groups wanting to demonstrate in downtown Philadelphia, and they had been surveilled and infiltrated by Philadelphia police, ironically violating their constitutional rights. So the attorneys locally here took the police to court.
Let's be on the same page with terminology. Surveillance, I presume, is legal. Is infiltration legal?
Well, it was legal until 1987, at which point Mayor Wilson Good issued a directive restricting infiltration by Philadelphia police without the express permission of the city's managing director.
And so in what form did that infiltration then take place in 2000?
The city ostensibly was working with several law enforcement agencies, including the Pennsylvania State Police, which deployed several infiltrators among activist groups, gathered intelligence, which the city then used to raid a warehouse in West Philadelphia where puppets and art and First Amendment material was being produced.
How was that raid legitimized?
Well, they used the pretext that activists were planning violence and were storing explosives in the warehouse. All of it was untrue.
But this infiltration upheld the letter, if not the spirit of the law, because it was apparently not Philadelphia police conducting it.
Yeah, but the question is whether the Philadelphia police did an end run around their policy by using intelligence gathered by the state police. They're all working together under a communications hub, much like today's fusion centers, and it's difficult to deny that they were not able to take advantage of infiltration within the city of Philadelphia to crack down on protesters.
Fusion centers refers to that collaboration with state, local, and federal agencies?
Exactly. We have one now in South Philadelphia that was erected in 2014, I believe. Incidentally, the Fusion Center in Philadelphia is under the command of a Philadelphia police inspector, Walt Smith. So it's difficult to deny that they're going to have a collaborative effort, especially when it comes to intelligence gathering.
Is there ACLU or other legal interest in the matter?
Definitely. The ACLU just sent a letter to the city asking for clarification on whether it would be infiltrating political groups or abiding by the 1987 mayoral directive.
You've apparently been covering conventions for quite a while now. Do protesters to national conventions inordinately come from outside, in this case, the Philadelphia region?
You know, I think that's the perception, and it's perpetrated by city officials who defame activists a lot of the time, calling them outside agitators or violent anarchists. But the truth is that most people that come to the streets for these types of demonstrations actually live in the host city.
Again, most of the legitimate activities are taking place in the vicinity of the Wells Fargo Sports Complex. Could other demonstrations or protests be planned, though, say, in Center City, Philadelphia?
Absolutely. In fact, that's what happened in 2000, is that activists pretty much ignored what they called the protest pit at FDR Park and focused their attention on Center City, using a series of blockade strategies, civil disobedience to disrupt normal activity in the downtown area.
What were some of the big takeaways of the book, Crashing the Party?
Well, one of my main themes is that the former police commissioner, John Timoney, was really an architect of today's policing model used against political activists.
That architecture was drawn up post 9/11.
No, it's actually pre-9/11, which is surprising because you'd think that a more aggressive policing model would be implemented as a result of threats of terrorism and that kind of thing. But in fact, these tactics were developed long before 9/11. The other theme of the book is what activists did in response, that the tactics they used specifically in a legal context, how they engaged with the legal system to fight back against that kind of repression.
And again, the main form of repression we've touched on is this notion of infiltration. Are there other means as well?
Oh, absolutely. It starts with the denial of permits. We've seen one of the largest demonstrations that happened in 2000. The Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign has been denied a protest permit just as it was in 2000. They've threatened to march anyway down Broad Street. We've seen repeatedly over the past 16 years heavy surveillance and infiltration, violence used against activists, indiscriminate violence, and mass arrests.
But this is not as much an indictment of Philadelphia as it is a more generalized sense of tactics and anticipation of gatherings and, in this case, political conventions.
That's true. These tactics are used at political summits, but they're also used across social movements, whether it's Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, or the climate justice movement. These tactics have been used to stifle dissent.
Even before John Timoney.
Yes, before John Timoney. The 60s and early 70s was a time of tumultuous police repression and a very aggressive policing model against protest. However, after that, through the 70s, 80s, and even 1990s, with some exception, it was a much lighter approach by law enforcement. It wasn't until the turn of the century around the RNC 2000 that a new policing model was implemented that is used to this day.
And that's what you're attributing much to John Timoney.
Absolutely.
And was that blueprint and those marching orders emulated at other conventions and cities and municipal departments since?
Indeed. In fact, John Timoney left the Philadelphia Police Department to go to the Miami Police Department as their police chief, and he oversaw one of the most violent responses to political protest in modern history with the Free Trade Area of the Americas demonstrations in Miami in 2003. Timoney then went on to work at a private security firm and is now employed by the Kingdom of Bahrain to suppress a popular uprising in that small Gulf Island state.
Hopefully everyone has an interest in the use of free speech and security and safety at this upcoming convention. Chris, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
Chris Hermes, activist, legal worker, and author of Crashing the Party, Legacies and Lessons from the RNC 2000.